Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, joining me to talk about the NFL, but very specifically for most of this conversation, the team he covers, the Miami Dolphins. It's a friend of mine, someone whose work I really respect and really enjoy, or I should say did enjoy, until last week when, during my debut on Around the Horn, a path was cleared for me to win, to celebrate one of the greatest days of my life. This man whooped me in
the final segment. Welcome to the league, rookie. Welcome to the league, man. That's it's awesome to have you on the show, man. Like, it's I'm glad that I'm not the new guy anymore. I think there's been like three new people even since you hopped in, so you're not even the rookie anymore. But we got a good class here, you know, us two, Kevin Clark. I can't say the name that is coming up, the next rookie, because I think that we like to keep it a secret, but we do have a debut coming at the end of the week. So, you know, everybody be on the lookout for that person. I'm not even going to give a designation, man, woman. Yeah, that person is making a debut.
Could be a robot, for all we know. Not sure.
Could be
the first robot.
Could be AI.
Could be AI. Like, could be Alan Iverson.
ChatATH. Could be making its debut.
I love ChatTH. Such a good bit. Joining me is my friend Marcel Louis Jacques Marcel. How are you, sir?
Very good, man. Very good. Bills Dolphins week is always a fun week for me. It's always the busiest week of any 52 weeks of the year. But it's fun busy. You know, it's a fun matchup. Obviously, both fan bases, I've got ties to both teams, both fan bases, and they let me hear it. So, you know, it's always, especially the games that are in Buffalo. I was telling my girlfriend Haley about it. It's going to be one of those trips where, like, I sit down at 5:45 a.m. on the plane and just, like, kind of, like, collapse and sink in. Like, I just, like, breathe out for the first time in 5 days. But it's going to be a sprint until then.
Of course. I mean, you are our former Bills writer. You're now the Dolphins writer for us at ESPN. Covered both those teams at a high level. And they've both been really interesting. When you were with the Bills, of course, we had the Josh Allen breakout. He turned into a superstar last year to a Tagovailoa. And this Dolphins offense gets off to a great start. They have a very topsy-turvy season. And then on top of all that, heading into Dolphins-Bills week, we get the sort of performance that leads you, Marcel, to say on the pre-show on Around the Horn that this Dolphins offense could be the greatest offense we have ever seen. And after watching that game last week, that doesn't feel like hyperbole. Give me your feelings about just sitting there and watching that game, seeing how that was going on. Like, was there a moment where you were just like, oh my God, this is actually happening? Like what was the... what was that moment for you where it shifted from like, oh, this is a blowout to, oh, this is an all-time game I will remember for an extremely long time?
You know, it's funny because I kind of started off as a joke, right? So their second touchdown of the game, Tua Tagovailoa does the no-look shovel pass with his right hand. We want it technically offhand, but he also technically is right-handed. So that was like his dominant hand, but semantics there. He scores, and I see the replay and tweet it out trying to be funny. I was like, oh, the Dolphins might drop 50 today. And I undersold it. I undersold it, Bill. Like, they didn't just drop. They grabbed 50 in the third quarter. Like, that was it went from, like, okay, they're doing whatever they want. Oh, they're really doing whatever they want. Oh, my God, this could get bad. So, like, it actually became, like, funny. We're, like, laughing in the box because, like, because of the absurdity, you know what I mean? Like, Devon Achane breaks off a 70-yard run. Chris Brooks goes for 54 yards. Bonus points to you if y'all can tell me where Chris Brooks went to college. Undrafted free agent. You know, they are getting to the bottom of the active roster right now and telling them go run some meaningful snaps. And they're breaking off 50-plus yard games. Robbie Anderson with a 70-yard touchdown. It was just like, I couldn't believe what I'm seeing. And, like, I've seen a beatdown like this before. I've been part of a beatdown like this before. My high school team, my sophomore year, we lost 71-0 to the best team in our district. Look, it was bad. It was bad. I was listening to the radio the next day, and they're reading off the high school scores, and somebody goes, And oh my goodness, this ridiculous score. Backville Christian 71-0 over Valley Christian. Oh man, that's kind of embarrassing. And I had to turn off the radio. I'm sitting there with my mom, my head hung in the passenger seat. But like, it's kind of what it feels like when somebody drops 70 on you. I can empathize with the Broncos here. But it's absurd because, like, you know, like I don't feel like it's possible to overreact to this. You know what I'm saying? It's not like they won like 49-0 or like even 56-0, 35-0. Like, this is 70 points. This is 726 yards of offense. Like, I don't think any, like, we haven't seen that before. Nobody here has seen that before. Like, so there's no such thing as an overreaction. Like, Tony asked me for my hottest take. So that it's a pretty hot take that they're the greatest offense of all time. But like, I would argue it's probably the greatest offensive performance of all time. And I stand firm behind that.
You should. Not only was it 70, but it was 70 where they called off the dogs on the final drive. They could have kept scoring and kneeled on the football on fourth down. And the scores you brought up are what makes this so interesting to me. Because, like, you know, I've seen Tua play awesome. I've seen Tyreek Hill break down teams. He had 200 yards week one. You know, I've seen that combination of Tua, Tyreek, and Waddle wreak havoc on opposing defenses. But you get to the fourth quarter of this game, Tua's on the sidelines. Tyreek Hill is on the sidelines. Jalen Waddle didn't play in this game because of a concussion. Like, the players, the guys who are supposed to be the players who are so talented and have such great chemistry that they just are undefendable at their best, they're all on the sidelines. And the Dolphins still ran for 140 yards and scored 21 points.
What can you do, man? Like, it got to a point where, you know, there's the argument, like, did the Broncos quit toward the end? And, you know, some of the tackling, some of the effort, it did look a little suspect. Mm-hmm. But like, how hard do you have to quit to give up 10 touchdowns, man? To some point, like, they were overmatched. I went into the game thinking, like, Mike McDaniels has been cooking a little bit to start the season. Like, I think that Sean Payton, and he just kind of represents a different era of coaching. I think it might be a tad, maybe it's a touch archaic, to be blunt, touch archaic. I had a feeling he was going to get cooked on Saturday. I had a feeling. I didn't know it was going to be by 50, but like, I thought a two touchdown, I thought a two touchdown win for Miami, a two score win for Miami, mm-hmm. Especially without Jalen Waddle. But like, they didn't even miss Jalen Waddle. Like, that passing game, it was dink and dive outside of the 54 yarder to Tyreek and the 67, I think, to 64 to Robbie Chosen. Like, Tua didn't average that. I think he averaged like 5 air yards per attempt yesterday. Like, it wasn't exactly the best game for the anti-Yak crowd, for the crowd that defends Tua against the Yak allegations. Like, that wasn't the best example of it. But like, Tyreek Hill had maybe the quietest 157 yard 9 catch game,
yes,
in NFL history. He dominated that secondary despite, you know, Patrick Surtain the second you know, supposedly shadowing. I don't think that shadow actually happened. Mm-hmm. But I digress. 350 rushing yards and 350 passing yards. It's never been done. It's never been done in the same game. So, like, I really don't think there's a cap on how good this Dolphins offense could be. Because, like you said, they throttled back. It could have been 73. It could have been 73. They could have maybe mm-hmm. taken some shots at the end zone. I personally think it's more disrespectful to kneel out instead of kicking a field goal in that situation. Because you're just telling them, I could be beating you worse, but I'm choosing not to. You're welcome. And then walking out of that stadium.
The thing I put in my column is, did you play Mortal Kombat at all when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Not well, but I played it.
So, well, me too. But, like, one of the World Combats had the friendship instead of the fatality, where, like, the match is over. You can, like, do a fatality instead of you just do a friendship and, like, hug them. That's what the Dolphins felt like. Yeah, I could finish you off right now, but I'm just going to give you a hug. That was good. That was good. Like, you know, like you're right, though. I mean, this was a team that they could do whatever they wanted throughout that game. And And like you said, it wasn't like they were throwing 50-yard bombs. They were making it look easy on the ground. They were making it look easy with their blocking. The thing that everyone maligns about this Dolphins offense, the offensive line, it looked like they were having a field day. Like it was, there were so many times in this game where I put on the All-22 afterwards and I'd watch a run play, and there were like three offensive linemen at the second level blocking linebackers. Like it felt like they were playing out what the playbook drew for run plays. Like they were so overwhelming, and that's not an emotion, that's not an experience I usually get from the Dolphins offensive line.
No, it's not. And it's kind of odd because there wasn't, it's not like there's wide scale change to this unit. Really the only difference between this unit and last year's is swapping Liam Eikenberg out for Isaiah Wynn. But like they're banking on a lot. They're banking on, if we keep at least four of these starters together, four of our best five from last year together, the continuity will help. They changed offensive line coaches. Butch Berry, a little more experienced at this level than Matt Applebaum, so that offensive coordinator Frank Smith could shift his focus away from the offensive line and help more with the offense as a whole. And that's a change that a lot of people should probably be talking about more, because it's a major sideline difference between this year and last year. But mostly, man, like they're just playing well. Like it, sometimes, like that's sometimes it's really that simple. They play well. You have a good showing there in week one. That confidence helps kind of propel you forward. And now they're playing to a level where it's like we feel like we can keep Tua's jersey clean for as long as we need to keep it clean. And speaking of Tua, like he also has impacted the cleanliness of his jersey, right? Like the rarity in which he's been hit this season. He's getting the ball out faster than anybody in the league right now. So it's a combination of, good offensive line play, of Tua getting the ball out quickly, of receivers getting open because he hasn't had to progress past his first read very often. And like, who I can't, it's hard to blame him. It's hard to blame him for not progressing through his reads when the first one is always open. Like, why not? Like, that's what you play the game for, right? So like, he hasn't had to yet. Like, it's just this like perfect recipe of football success being concocted in Miami, and then Mike McDaniel is cooking it to perfection. He's like Emeril back there. I'm sure Emeril can cook a cake, can bake a cake. I'm positive of it actually.
Yes, no doubt, Emeril, if needed, could bake as well, in addition to making various Cajun style dishes. That's funny. It's like a Cajun chef, right?
I think so. I think he transcends food. So I just know Emeril. I don't know what he's famous for.
Yeah,
It's like a like the
that's
average
fair.
the like the average person knows who Derek Jeter is, but probably can't like rattle off any sort of stat line for him if they don't know baseball. You know what I'm
Right.
saying?
100%. Like he would see his face and be like, "Oh, of course, that's Derek Jeter." No, for sure. I really think, given how much of the conversation this offseason was about, can Tua stay healthy? Can he avoid the hits? He's taken jiu-jitsu. He's like, like this is the inevitability the Dolphins are going to have to confront. I believe he's been knocked down five times in three games, which is the fewest hits in all of the National Football League so far this season. And that's a testament to the offensive architecture, a testament to the offensive line, and like you said, a testament to Tua getting the ball out so quickly. But here's my difficult question for you, Marcel. Through three games, you've watched this team play. They were incredible last week. They were good against the Patriots, but only scored 24 points. If there is a weakness for this offense, in the past, we'd always say the offensive line was the weakness. Now, that looks like it might be a strength. If there is a weakness to this offense beyond Tua getting hurt, which obviously, just in terms of the assuming injury, taking injuries off the table, is there a structural or schematic weakness you think this offense has that defenses might be able to exploit a little more than they have through the first 3 weeks of the season?
If there is, we haven't seen it. If there is, we haven't seen it. The weakness could be maybe, if Tua tries to bite off a little more than he can chew. We've seen that on a handful of passes this season. Only two have been intercepted. There have been a handful where it's like, maybe that was a little overboard. Oh, you probably didn't need to do that right now. You didn't need to force that there. But like, if you're talking about if your best chance at beating an offense is relying on it to beat itself, you're talking about something special. Like you're talking about a pretty special unit, and I think that's kind of where they are right now. Is like you have to hope, you know, Tua's got an off day, has an off day, maybe tired legs for some reason or another. Maybe he just doesn't have it. We saw it last year against the 49ers. Like he saw the field really well. He just couldn't throw. It didn't really make sense. It was throws that we'd seen him make all season, and he just was missing. So like that, and I guess maybe there's only one ball. Does that count as a weakness? Like there's only one ball. There are four running backs in that room right now who have all proven that they deserve play time at one point or another in their career. Like I don't know what they're gonna do with. I don't know what the plan is with Jeff Wilson when he comes back. I talked to him in the locker room the other day. He said that he's feeling good. He's gonna be ready in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks of, you know, 2 weeks of Devon Achane. I don't know what role. I don't know what role exists. And Jeff Wilson was pretty good for them last year. Like he deserves some play time. But like Raheem Mostert's running the ball like a lead back, like an A1 back, and we see if it's possible for a 205-yard performance from Achane, like you can't just leave him off the field. Savon Achman had a great summer. There's no world in which you could put Savon Achman back on the field now. So like it's one of those. I guess your problem is dividing the playtime. Like maybe if you it's possible to overthink by trying to rotate guys in like that. But like it's if they could do this, if they could do something like that without Jaylen Waddle on the field, without the threat of Jaylen Waddle on the field. When teams know, like, okay, Tyreek is option one, two, and three, and they still let him go for 160 yards, I don't know how to find a weakness. And granted, you know, there's a little bit of recency bias in there. It's hard to identify a weakness a few days after a team goes for 720 yards. Like, of course, they looked perfect, but they did whatever they want against the Chargers as well. They did whatever they wanted for the most part against the Patriots. It's not like, you know, this was just out of the blue. Is all I'm saying. It's not like this was random.
Can you imagine how frustrating it must have been if you're Jeff Wilson? Like you're on the sideline. Every single running back on the roster is eating. There's huge holes. Everyone's going for 50-yard gains. Like you're injured. You can't play. It just must be so frustrating to sit there and be like, I would have 150 yards in this game if I was playing.
Yeah, like he probably would have. He definitely would have cracked 100 total yards. That like, I think the scary thing though about the Achane and Mostert tandem, like, I use binoculars in the press box. I don't have eagle eyes. Like, I have corrective lenses, and I use binoculars. So like, I'm not saying I am the most sharp-eyed person up there, but Bill, like, it got to a point I couldn't tell the difference between Achane running and Mostert running. And I think that that is actually kind of scary. I think it's kind of scary because that means you have two physical runners. You have two physical runners who are also sub 4.4 guys. Like they run the ball in the same exact style. Like it's you can't just like say, oh, okay, like Achane's in the game. Or oh, that's Achman. That's not Mostert. Like it's probably a passing down here. Like you can't differentiate based on who is on the field. They can do the same basic things. There's no break. There's no break. Imagine being tired and your reward in the fourth quarter after playing, you know, 55, 60 snaps on defense, your reward is another guy that runs sub 4.2.
Yes, exactly.
Muster it up, especially if you're playing in Miami and it's hot and humid and it's not a fun experience, I don't think, for a defense. And like I know that like, with every word I say here, if any player on the Buffalo Bills or any member of the Buffalo Bills social team is listening to this, like it's got the opportunity to create some sort of locker room bulletin board material. But like, dude, I think the Bills have been susceptible in the past to big plays, big catch and run plays, big plays on the ground. Like, I don't think anybody's thinks that they're just going to take the top off of Buffalo's defense, but like there is serious concern. I think that a slant can turn into a 60-yard touchdown, or that, you know, Raheem Mostert, who had 136 yards against them in December and didn't play in the playoff game, that Raheem Mostert can break through to the second level and take off. Like, they're not invincible. The defense is excellent, but like that is maybe the one area over the past several years that the Bills have been susceptible to giving up big plays is on those catch and runs and just straight up on the ground.
Derrick Henry had a long run against the Bills for a long score as well. I mean, I think you're 100% correct. I to be clear, don't put me on the bulletin board. Marcel is the only one who belongs on the bulletin board. But no, I mean, you're right though. And like that is a, that is the sort of one play ability that it feels like the Dolphins have more than anybody else in football. And the Bills at this point don't. Like, the Bills had that at one point where they could, you know, like, I felt like Josh Allen could hit anybody, any spot on the field for a touchdown at any time. And they had real breakaway speed at running back. They had, you know, they had players who were like Gabe Davis being, you know, maybe the wide receiver, but they had players who, and an offense that was going to create touchdown opportunities every single drive. You could not rest. And that has not been the case the last year, really, for the Bills. Like, we've seen teams go to a lot more of the two high coverages. The Bills have not necessarily had answers with Ken Dorsey. The offense has been good, and it was good last week, very good last week, but it has not been as explosive as it was maybe the year last year you were there, and certainly not as explosive as the Dolphins offense. And I think that could be a difference in this game, right? It, you know, it's going to be closer. I don't think anybody expects the Dolphins to drop 70. That will be, that will be a topic for conversation if the Dolphins drop 70 on the Bills in this game. But, you know, if this game is close, that Dolphins' ability to spring a long touchdown on any single play might be the difference.
It might be. I mean, football games, NFL games in general, come down to what, like 3-4 plays already. It's not like they haven't been able to break off big games against Buffalo over the past couple of years. I think Jalen Waddle had like a 70-yard touchdown in Buffalo last year, the game in Buffalo that ended in, I think, a game-winning buzzer-beater field goal by Tyler Bass to win the game. That was funny. Like, there was supposed to be this like massive snowstorm that game, right? And the snow never came until the fourth quarter. It just started pummeling the ground, and like it was like a power up for the Bills. And all of a sudden, they erased this like 8-point deficit, score 11 unanswered, I think, in the last 8 minutes of the game to win. But like, I digress a little bit. We have just, the big play, it's hard to be reliant on the big play, right? Like, that's kind of like an unsustainable model for an offense to base itself on. But that's what makes the Dolphins kind of special and unique, in that like, these aren't just like a bunch of pace merchants. You know what I mean? Like, they don't, to borrow a term from Europe, they're not pace merchants. They're not guys who just, they're fast and that's it. Like, these are really good football players who also run 4-3, 40-yard dashes.
Yes.
So like, the routes are going to be crisp. Like, they're going to be able to set you up. They're going to be able to do some damage after the catch. They're going to catch the ball to begin with. Like, there's just, there's so many ways that they can hurt you. And then the scary thing now is like, they're not just relying on big passing plays to get by. They've proved on the ground that they can do the same.
Mm-hmm. No question. I mean, they are a much more complete offense than they were a year ago. On the defensive side of the ball, it almost feels like you have to give them an incomplete, because there's been no Jalen Ramsey. And frankly, last week, they could have played 7 players on defense. They still would have won the game. But they are 21st in points allowed per game so far. And they had trouble in week one. It really came down to, you know, a stop on that final drive, creating some pressure on Justin Herbert with a couple sacks to help to really sort of seal a shootout game. So on the defensive side of the ball, which is going to be tested by the Bills this week, what have you liked so far? What's impressed you for Miami under Vic Fangio so far?
But I can appreciate just kind of like the change in philosophy. I think for the past couple of years, this has been a blitz heavy, man heavy team. And that's just not really the case anymore. I think Vic actually tries to make a point not to have to blitz, or, you know, not to have to manufacture pressure, but to be able to just get it naturally. But I've appreciated the coverage as well. The downfield coverage without Jalen Ramsey, you kind of assumed like, okay, no Jalen. They still have Xavien Howard. They still got Kader Kohu, like, still have Javon Holland. They should be okay in the secondary. But I think like, we've seen Kohu step his game up to another level after a pretty impressive undrafted rookie season, or rookie season as an undrafted free agent. Javon Holland possibly has been the best safety in football through 3 weeks. You know, in terms of not just being like a center fielder, but being a turnover creator. You know, I think he had two forced fumbles on Sunday alone. So, two forced fumbles on Sunday alone, and I don't believe that that's his first forced turnover of the season as well. It's escaping me right now off the top of my head. Like this team is able to cover, and they're getting pressure. I mean, they pressured Russell Wilson 20 times yesterday on Sunday, and it's not like, again, it's not like they're just dialing up. They're not dialing up cover zero every play. They're not just running engage eight, you know, every play. This isn't like some sort of manufactured Madden defense. Like, I think like that alone has been impressive. They've gotten good linebacker play out of an unexpected name in Andrew Van Ginkel, who was a terror against the New England Patriots in week two. And, you know, he continued to play well Sunday against the Broncos. They were trying to move him to inside linebacker this summer. They did move him to inside linebacker this summer. And he had to, you know, bounce back onto the edge, out to the edge in week two with Jalen Phillips hurt, and was dominant. So I think he's an edge. I think he's an outside backer again. But, you know, just like kind of like unheralded names have been playing exceptionally well. And, you know, that's what's impressed. That run defense against the Chargers was alarming. I believe 230 rushing yards allowed. That is not something a good defense does. But it wouldn't be the first time that an above average defense had an outlying performance, like an outlier performance in the wrong direction. So like, I think they've cleaned it up over the past 2 weeks, and you know, they're going to get a test this week against, you know, outside of Lamar Jackson, probably the best mobile threat at quarterback in the NFL right now, and a much improved ground game. Which is an element. You know, we're talking about the Dolphins improving their run game. Like this Bills offense has, I don't think, ever had this good of a ground game behind Josh Allen since he's gotten to Western New York.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and that's what I was going to ask you. You know, obviously, we've seen the Dolphins get hit by the running game before. Do you think the Bills, if given the opportunity, if given a bunch of light boxes, if given, you know, a defense that's going to dare them to run the football, do you think they'll take the cheese and run? Or do you think they were just so committed to Josh Allen and so committed to throwing the football that they will try and throw, even if running might be the better option?
I don't think so, because like the way to win the game, or the way to limit this Dolphins offense, the easiest way is obviously to keep them off the field. And what keeps an offense off the field is controlling the clock and controlling the game on the ground. So like, if that's what they're getting, if that is available to them, if James Cook is finding holes, if Damien Harris is finding holes, and Latavius Murray is pushing the pile in short yardage situations, then why would you go away from that? Especially when, you know, you can still technically run the ball when Josh Allen drops back to pass. Like, I don't think he's been as prone to scrambling as he has in the years past this year. But like, the threat is obviously still there. I'm just, you know, I'm curious, and not just from, you know, a schematic standpoint. What I'm really watching for, though, with Josh Allen against the Dolphins defense is like, when does that moment happen? There's been constantly, it seems like every time they play, there is a moment where Josh Allen loses his head a little bit. And I don't mean like he does a, you know, it's a head scratching play or bad interception. Like, I mean like a personal foul call. I mean like starting a brawl. It's not his fault 100%. You know, Bills fans, I could feel them typing up, you know, their angry tweet, their angry Christian Wilkins tweet. Christian Wilkins provokes the hell out of him every time they play. It you can't deny it anymore. He is Josh Allen's Joker. I've said it before, I'll say it again. He's Josh Allen's Joker. Joker doesn't always win. Rarely wins. And that's been the case. Dolphins are, I think, 1-8 in their last 9 against the Bills. Rarely wins, but forces Batman to break character a handful of times and fairly easily. And that is something Christian Wilkins has excelled at. And so, again, we talked about these games come down to, right, like 3-4 plays. If one of them is Josh Allen, you know, kind of losing his temper and drawing a 15-yard penalty, like we saw in Miami last year, Like that could be impactful in a game that shouldn't be, that should be a one score victory for one team or the other. So like I am interested in that. Like it's, again, you think it's unsustainable to rely on that if you're the Dolphins, and it's a little unethical to rely on that if you're the Dolphins, but hey man, rivalry is a rivalry.
Absolutely. Now, I wouldn't normally do this, but because you did beat me on around the horn, I'm going to make you do the thing that I know you're not going to want to do. I wouldn't want to do. Who wins this game?
Oh boy, I knew that was coming.
And who wins this game, and why do they win this game?
Man, you know, my head says Buffalo because the game is, it's close. The teams are closely matched up. It's a good defense, and the game is in Buffalo. But my gut says the Dolphins, and I'm going to go with my gut here. I got Dolphins, again, one score win. I don't expect it to be a blowout. That's just simply not how, that's not how these games, that's not how these games work. But I think the offense is doing whatever it wants right now. I don't think anybody has come up with a counter for it yet. I don't think that that counter is coming anytime particularly soon. I know like they're probably going to draw some parallels to last season when, you know, in week four, even before Tua was injured, like it's not like they were just marching up and down the field. I think the difference is that was a short week as well. Like they're coming into a short week against the Bengals, and then like kind of things sort of unraveled from there. It took the league a long time to catch up to Mike McDaniel last year. It realistically, when they're at full strength, it wasn't until December that defenses really started figuring out, you know, okay, disrupt the timing, pressure them at the line of scrimmage, so on and so forth. I don't think that that counter has come quite yet. I don't think it's coming quite yet. And this, their proficiency on the ground, it forces a defense. It forces the defense to play honestly. You can't, you know, you can't stack the box because the weapons they have outside. You can't go light boxes because Mostert and Achane might score another 8 touchdowns on you. And it's crazy because that's not an exaggeration, right? Like they literally right. scored 8 touchdowns against the Broncos. Right. Like 8 is like a number I like to say like when I'm exaggerating, and that was quite that was quite literal back then. But yeah, I think there's just, there's simply too much. I think there's too much firepower right now. I respect, and I still think the Bills are a good team, dude. It's not like the, like I didn't see week one and say it's over for them. But like, I think that, you know, NFL is the NFL, man. Anybody can win it on any given day, but they're still one of the best teams in the AFC, one of the best teams in the NFL. I kind of think that the Dolphins are the best team in the NFL because, again, like I don't think I'm overreacting to the 70 points. Like I said before, I don't think you can overreact to 70 points and 700 yards, but like it didn't come out of nowhere. You know what I'm saying? Like if the Panthers yes. scored 70 points with 700 yards, I'm not going to say that's the best offense ever. I'm not going to say that's mm-hmm. one of the best offenses that, and I wouldn't even call them the best offense in the league because it would be mm-hmm. out of the blue. It'd be random. This wasn't particularly random. This right. wasn't particularly random. Like the Dolphins have been marching up the field whenever they want. You know, it's, they had 530 yards against the Chargers, the other 400 against a good Patriots defense in Foxborough. Like they've been putting up the numbers. This was just kind of like a perfect storm, but not an absurd storm to think about, like not an out of the question storm to think about.
Right. Absolutely. And I think the point there is really valid. You know, like this is, put it this way. If before heading into week three, if I had said, hey, Marcel, I went into the future and one NFL team scores 70 points this week, the Dolphins would have been probably the first team, maybe the second team, you would have guessed. Not like, you would have guessed 25 teams, and then you would have guessed the Dolphins.
Yeah, like it would have been. I think I would have probably guessed them first.
I agree.
Maybe Kansas City won them. They're 1-2 either way. Like whatever order, like those are the first two teams that you are. Those are the first two teams that you're guessing.
Right, and that's warranted at this point. The Dolphins belong in that tier, maybe just with the Chiefs, where it feels like anything is possible for them on offense in any week. And frankly, you know, for the Chiefs, like that's a Lifetime Achievement Award for Patrick Mahomes. It's not like the offense has been incredible so far this season, but for the Dolphins, that is not just a what they did last year, but also what they've done so far this season as well. Wanted to hit a couple of general NFL questions before we get you out of here, and one of them was about where you sort of put the Dolphins and where you put the teams around the Dolphins. And it feels like through 3 weeks, and please correct me if you don't think this is true for you, it feels like the 3-3 undefeated teams, the Dolphins, the Eagles, the Niners, are widely considered the three best teams in football. And I'm not, you know, you can rank them however you want. I think the Dolphins have a very credible case to be number one. Niners have a case as well. Eagles, I think, have not been on that level, but just my opinion. But outside of the undefeated team, Marcel, who do you think is the best 2-1 team right now?
I mean, we did just see the Chiefs drop, what was it, 41-50 on a...
On the Bears, though.
On the Bears, but, like, it's still 40.
In front of Taylor Swift.
It was in front of Taylor Swift. But, like, the point is, like, that offense can still hum. They did, but, like, they did have trouble, you know, the more they think about it, they had trouble with the Jags. And the Jags just got torn up by the Texans. So, like, by some sort of transitive property, the Texans might be better than the Chiefs. I don't know. Don't take me seriously, people. I'm spitballing there. That's a tough one because, like, there's kind of like a glaring question mark about all of these 2-1 teams. Like, you look at the Bills, obviously that Jets game. Like, I mean, that's not who they are, but, like, you can see their floor, and the floor is not very pretty. The Cowboys, again, like, just got dominated by the Arizona Cardinals here in their first game without Trevon Diggs. The Chiefs, again, you know, look pretty mortal against the Jaguars. Obviously lost to the Lions, but no Travis Kelce that helped. That's a contributing factor. It's really hard to say, but I'm going to stick with the Cowboys. I'm going to stick with the Cowboys here. Them and the Bills are pretty neck and neck. I like the Cowboys' ability to get to the quarterback a little bit more. I like any defense that has Micah Parsons on it. I think that offense is like a little bit more to it than Buffalo. I think it's just a little bit more versatile than Buffalo, although Buffalo does unquestionably have the better quarterback. I don't think that you can go wrong if you're choosing between the Bills and the Cowboys, like, to be clear. Like, it's like, if you can make an argument for either team, and I'd say, yeah, okay. Like, I'm not going to, like, fight and battle with you. But, like, if we're splitting hairs here, I like the Cowboys defense a little more despite the showing against the Cardinals. I think that's a wake-up call. That's something that, like, if you see it in September, it doesn't scare you as much. Just like with the Bills, like a performance against the Jets, it doesn't scare you as much in September as it would in, like, November or December.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it feels like, you know, there's some recency bias with the fact that the Cowboys just lost on Sunday, whereas the Bills' sort of ugly loss was week one. Like, if the Cowboys had lost to the Cardinals in week one, would have been a week of television. Everyone would have said, oh, the Cowboys suck. And then the next 2 weeks, they would have blown out, you know, a couple other teams. And we would have been like, wow, well, they righted the ship. They look great. You know, they're dominating. Whereas the Bills, their ugly loss was week one. Last week, they come out and just blow out the Commanders, really, really, from, you know, a complete, not compared to the Dolphins beating the Broncos, but, you know, a comprehensive victory for the Bills. Was not pretty. I went back and watched it. I was writing about Sam Howell for this week, and Sam Howell was in hell for the entirety of that game. Poor guy was overwhelmed by the Bills defense. But I think you're 100% correct. I think I would consider throwing the Seahawks in there because I feel like they have been so impressive on offense the past couple of weeks. I still think the defense maybe, you know, has to figure some stuff out. Getting Jamal Adams back this week will hopefully help them. Having Devon Witherspoon on the roster after he was out week one has helped. But I think there's still, you know, a pretty wide chasm between even the Cowboys and the Bills and those teams at the top of the NFL right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. But so you're telling me that we're not going to consider the Indianapolis Colts in the as one of the better 2-1 teams in the NFL or the Saints?
First place AFC South Indianapolis Colts. Oh, I mean, God. You know what?
Dumpster fire division.
You know what? I know a lot. I know a few people who would not have expected the Colts to win two games this year without Jonathan Taylor. So
That's fair.
starting off 2-1, even if it's the even if it's the Bears where they started off 2-1 and then they lose every other game the rest of the year, at least they had that hot start. At least they beat the Ravens, who, what a frustrating game that was.
Frustrating game, what a frustrating season already. Just to suffer the injuries that they did in week one, losing J.K. Dobbins, Ronnie Stanley is hurt as well. Like it's like God, even though I think Odell was hurt, this past game, it's so frustrating to see. But like that's like kind of like the MO for the Ravens and the Chargers. Like they just always suffer these major injuries to their key stars. It's just you hate to see it for them, but.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think like I think it's fair that that trio of Buffalo, Buffalo, Dallas, and Kansas City, with Dallas and Buffalo, I put them like I put them like in a touch, like a tad above KC right now,
Yep.
but they're still in the same basic tier. They're still in the same zip code.
For sure. I agree wholeheartedly. One more question for you. And we'll finish up here, Marcel. And this is an open-ended question. So you can be as curt and short as you would like, or you can be as expansive as you would like. What should the Jets do at quarterback?
You know, I initially thought like, oh, why would they not call the Saints about Jameis Winston? Like, clearly, I don't know how much Jameis factors into New Orleans' future plans if they go out and get Derek Carr this offseason. And then they do still have Taysom Hill to play quarterback in a pinch if need be. Like, why not? Like, I think that would be a perfect guy for this offense. Just somebody who is going to try to put points up on the board, right? But I've said it, a couple times on Around the Horn now. Like the rest of the NFL does not exist to service the New York Jets. So, like the Jets even calling about your backup quarterback is a reminder of how important having a good backup quarterback is, right?
Yes.
Like I'm like, wait, am I? Won't I not put myself in the same position you're in if I trade you this guy? So it's tough. I think the. And there's been a couple rumors. I don't even know if they count as rumors, man. Like I think it's just, on certain platforms, this has been floated out there that they could trade for Kirk Cousins. You know, if the Vikings decide, okay, like we're 0-3, it's time to pull the plug. But the thing about that for the Vikings is like they don't have like that somebody waiting in the wings, right? Like they don't. Their quarterback of the future is not on their roster currently. They don't have somebody where they're like, oh, I want to see more of him. We should give him a chance at a starting job. Like, I don't think it's worth alienating the fan base and therefore losing money for a season. So, like, it's hard for me to see that as a possibility. But there is a team who the quarterback of their future is probably on the roster. They're not very good right now and could stand to part ways with their starter, and that's the Tennessee Titans. I think Ryan Tannehill, he's not a world beater by chance. Like I don't think like that Ryan Tannehill makes you the Super Bowl favorite, but I think it makes them a playoff team before things get too out of control. I think it makes them a playoff team or playoff contender. This is somebody like who can, at the very least, keep an offense on the field. He can at least go get you some points. You can at least throw the ball to a receiver that is supposed to be open and anticipate windows. It's not Zach Wilson. Like at this point, Robert Saleh, I think, feels like there's nothing he can do. And to an extent, like there is with the roster as currently constructed. But like at some point, like you just can't be playing, you can't play Zach Wilson anymore. Like at some point, even if you don't have a better option, you don't think you have a better option, like you have to put him down because at this point, you look like you're rewarding bad behavior. And you're excusing bad behavior and bad play. So, like, I don't, he said something the other day that, like, Zach is much improved. Well, he's still the worst quarterback in the NFL. So, like, who cares? Like, if you improved from, it's like, bringing your grades home and, like, you got, like, a 35% on the test, and the next test, you get a 37%. Like, yeah, okay, you improved, but, like, you're still failing. You're still failing.
Here's my only concern, Marcel, and I'm not going to say QBR is a be all end all. It is not a perfect metric, but Zach Wilson is 33rd in the NFL in QBR right now. Do you know who is 32nd in the NFL in QBR? It's Ryan Tannehill.
Oh, Ryan Tannehill. Ooh. Tannehill. This has to be a trick question. That's good.
It was a trick question. But that's my only concern is if you're the Jets, like I understand you have to try and do something to save your season, especially given how lofty the expectations were for your fans before the year. But I just wonder if you're throwing good money after bad money, if you go and trade for a Ryan Tannehill or a Kirk Cousins, where you look at their teams and Kirk Cousins, Vikings are not struggling because of the offense, but like the Vikings are 0-3. Tennessee is 1-2 and they've looked terrible. They were awful against the Browns. And I'm not blaming the quarterbacks for those issues, but you look at this Jets team and they have not run the ball effectively since week one. They have one very talented receiver and then a few guys who are friends with Aaron Rodgers. The offensive line is a mess. They already lost Dwayne Brown to IR. Mekhi Becton's had to move to left tackle. They've been giving up plenty of hits. Zach Wilson has not helped, but the offensive line is not playing great football now by any means. I sort of wonder, like, as constructed, even with Kirk Cousins, like, let's say they trade for Kirk Cousins in week five. Like, do you think they have enough to be a serious playoff contender, given how good the top of the AFC is?
And you know, like when I define playoff contender as somebody who can contend for a playoff spot. So like, sure. Yeah, I think that they are, I think they can contend for a playoff spot. I think there's enough talent on this defense alone to keep them in games, as we've seen, like their defense is keeping them in games. They just need a small push from their offense. It's not even with Tannehill, with Kirk Cousins. Like, I like what you said, like the group of pass catchers is not advanced enough to be a top tier, a high end offense, not without Rodgers, and not without Rodgers, and not without a willingness to commit to the run game, which has been kind of baffling. But like, I feel like Tannehill is, while he's not, like I said, it's not going to make them a Super Bowl favorite or maybe even a Super Bowl contender, but it can get you the playoffs, and then from there, you know, anything can happen. But he is just good enough that if you rely on your ground game, he can find a spot or two throughout a game. You know, he's going to average probably like 215, 220 passing yards a game. That's better than 140 that Zach Wilson is putting up. Like, it's better. I don't think it's something that like gets them back on the same level. I don't think there's a move that gets them back on the same level as they were at when they had Rodgers, but it's at least better. It makes people think that your offense could possibly score when they're on the field, you know, on a scale between, you know, the Dolphins, where it's like they probably score, to right now the Jets, where they're not scoring whatsoever. Like, it puts them a little bit above the cellar there. It takes them out the cellar a little bit. So, like, there's not a lot of, you know, there's not many moves that they could possibly make, especially now that the retired guys aren't coming out of retirement. Like, shoot, man. Like, yes. We saw J. Cole post Colin Kaepernick's letter to Joe Douglas. Like, why not? Like, just somebody who actually wants to go play for the Jets. Like, why not, man? Yes. Go see what's up. Go kick the tires. But, like, the other rumors, like, Matt Ryan, are you joking? He doesn't even want to come out. But, like, are you serious? You put out a call to Matt Ryan? Phillip Rivers maybe has a couple throws in him. But I know I didn't hear somebody say Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, like, no.
Like, if these are the names you're talking about, Cam Newton, Robert Griffin III, like, there is not like a steady surplus of available quarterbacks right now. Carson Wentz, like, it's not a good look right now. And, you know, they put all their eggs into the Aaron Rodgers basket. I don't think many people blame them in real time. Like, it's, you know, hindsight's 20/20 right now. You put all your eggs and the basket broke. It sucks, man. No one expected it. Nobody likes it this early in the season. You hate it. It is what it is, though. You're burnt.
Right. 100%. And we can sit here and say, hey, they should have had a better quarterback than Zach Wilson backing up Aaron Rodgers just in case something happened. But too late for that now. Marcel, you're back in my good graces after destroying me on Around the Horn. You gave me 50 minutes of great podcast content. Where can people check out your coverage of this upcoming game and in general all the stuff you're doing here at ESPN.
Yeah, you know, I always check my Twitter or X account at Marcel_LJ, or if you just want the work and none of the me, you can go to ESPN.com's Miami Dolphins team page, go to NFL, go to teams, click on the Dolphins. All my content is there, sans opinion. You know, if maybe I'm not very funny to you, but you're interested in what I have to say, that's my personal recommendations. Got a couple things coming out this week, obviously in preparation for the game, including a preview with our Bills writer, Elena Getzenberg, that should be dropping on Friday. So, you know, exciting week here. Catch me on Around the Horn on Friday as well. And on ESPN Daily. So, like, I mean, I'm inevitable this week, man. It's Bills Dolphins week. Like, there's no escaping me, unfortunately for y'all.
I appreciate it. Thanks for giving us the time, Marcel.
Of course.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jet's Pizza location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Right, thanks so much to Marcel Louis-Jacques. And like I said last week, going to add something here at the end that's been on my mind. Don't have a name for the segment so far. We'll give that some thought. But I wanted to talk about something that I've had conversations with friends of mine, people in the media, just friends of mine who follow football, and something that I found very frustrating about the conversation about the Chargers after last week's win over the Vikings. There's a major gap between what decisions were made at the end of the game and what the outcomes for those decisions should be. So Brandon Staley went for it on 4th-and-1 against the Vikings. It was, I believe, 28-24. It was a 4-point lead. It's 4th-and-1, 1:47 to go. The Vikings out of timeouts and the ball on the Chargers 24-yard line. And I've heard plenty of people, I believe my friend, my colleague, Dominique Foxworth, said it on our taping Sunday night. Other people I've heard as well have said Brandon Staley would have been fired if the Chargers had lost that game because of what he decided at the end of the game. And that seems crazy to me from multiple levels. And I'll start with the simple one, which is, given that scenario, 4th-and-1, 1:47 to go, Vikings out of timeouts, Chargers 24-yard line, 4-point lead, you win the game if you get a yard. And I will tell you, I have not seen every single team's analytical model. I have not seen every single team's win expectancy chart. I can say with confidence that this would be a go on every single model that comes out there. If you only need 1 yard to win the game, you're going to convert that. Now, common thing I hear when teams go forward on 4th-and-1 and they fail, and the Chargers very much failed in this play, is, I like the decision, but the play call was terrible. And I did not like the play call. But again, that's not Brandon Staley's play call. Like, yes, Brandon Staley makes the decision to go forward on 4th-and-1, but the play call is from Kellen Moore, who, I think Kellen Moore is a great offensive coordinator. He's done an excellent job so far in Los Angeles. I didn't like this one play call. That happens. If you feel like the Chargers should have fired Brandon Staley after deciding to go for it and failing, if you thought that decision was so bad that he should have been fired. Are you really going to not fire him because the Chargers tipped a ball twice into the air and that had them win the game, that they came up with a miraculous last-second interception? Does that make Brandon Staley's decision better? It shouldn't. That's crazy that you would let that miraculous play that has nothing to do with Brandon Staley's decision decide whether Brandon Staley is the best coach for your football team. In general, I think the people grumbling, and I brought up Dominique. Dominique's not one of these people, so I don't want to criticize Dominique. But in general, there are people who grumble, oh, Brandon Staley, aggressiveness, analytics, blah, 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 blah. Those people generally aren't paying attention. He was 13th in the NFL in aggressiveness index last year per the former Football Outsiders. That is not particularly high. It's not like the 2021 Brandon Staley is still around. He's been much more conservative since the start of the 2022 season. He did, I believe, against the Browns last year, go for it in this situation and fail, but that is a very reasonable call to make, even if you don't get it. It is the right decision for your football team. So if you're going to be critical of Brandon Staley, and I think he deserves criticism, I think you have to be critical about the defense, because that is the problem with this football team right now. They've been very sloppy so far this season with penalties. Of course, they've had injuries because they're the Chargers, and the Chargers always have injuries. But the additions they've made with J.C. Jackson in free agency, Khalil Mack via trade, the defensive tackles they've brought in to stop the run have not panned out. This defense still has the same flaws they had a few years ago. They're not good stopping the run. They're inconsistent against the pass. They don't take away big plays when that's supposed to be the hallmark of this defense. That has not panned out. And if you want to eventually fire Brandon Staley because he's a defensive-minded coach and the defense is not playing well, well, that is a fair argument. But firing him because of his fourth down decisions when he's making a call that every single team in the National Football League should be making is foolish. All right. We have more audio coming next week. Plenty of football to discuss, and maybe we'll even have another 70-point performance to talk about. If you're a beat writer for ESPN and your team scores 70 points, you are coming on this podcast. So hope you guys enjoyed Marcel, who I think is awesome, even though he did beat me on Around the Horn. And we'll have more audio coming next week here on the Bill Barnwell Show.